Fog has a way of hiding everything, the runway lights, the taxiways, the other aircraft. On March 27, 1977, fog rolled across Los Rodeos Airport on the island of Tenerife in the Canary Islands. And before that afternoon was over, 583 people were dead. The worst aviation accident in history did not happen in a thunderstorm. It did not happen because an engine failed or a wing came apart. It happened because two Boeing 747s were in the same place at the same time, and nobody in either cockpit knew it until the moment of impact. I'm Tower. This is ATIS on Radio Hangar, and today we are going all the way into Tenerife, because this accident is not just history, it is embedded in every radio call you make every time you fly. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com now. March 27th, 1977, a bomb has gone off at Gran Canaria Airport on a neighboring island in the Canary chain. Another bomb threat is in the air. Gran Canaria shuts down while police sweep the facility. Every aircraft inbound to Gran Canaria gets diverted. Most of them go to Los Rodeos Airport on Tenerife. It is the nearest alternate with enough pavement. Los Rodeos is not built for this. It has one runway, one parallel taxiway, and suddenly it has 13 diverted aircraft sitting on its ramps and taxiways with nowhere to go. The ramp is congested enough that the taxiway is partially blocked by parked aircraft. KLM Royal, Dutch Airlines Flight 4805 is one of those diverted 747s. On the flight deck is Captain Jacob Veldhuizen van Zanten. He is not just any captain. He is arguably the most famous pilot in the Netherlands. His face is on KLM advertising campaigns. He runs the airline's entire flight training program. He is the kind of pilot other pilots introduce their children to at air shows. He is also running out of crew duty time. The crew has been sitting on the ground for hours while Gran Canaria is cleared. Every hour they sit, the window to legally depart grows smaller. If they do not get off the ground soon, they will exceed their duty limits. The flight will be canceled, and passengers will be stranded overnight in Tenerife. Van Zanten knows this. He has been managing it in his head. The pressure is real, and it is building. Pan Am Flight 1736 is the other 747. Captain Victor Grubbs is at the controls. His crew has been waiting on the ramp as well, but the Pan Am crew is relaxed by comparison. They have no particular clock running against them. When Gran Canaria finally clears and reopens, the tower at Los Rodeos begins moving traffic. Here is where the cascade starts. Los Rodeos has one runway designated 09 and a parallel taxiway, but the taxiway is not wide enough to turn a loaded 747 around, so departing aircraft have to taxi down the runway itself, reach the far end, then backtrack to the threshold for takeoff. This is called backtaxiing, and it is not uncommon at smaller airports with restricted configurations. The tower clears both 747s to backtaxi down runway 09. KLM goes first. Pan Am follows behind them. The tower instructs Pan Am to exit the runway at taxiway Charlie 3, cross behind KLM, and hold in the loading area until they receive further clearance. The fog is thickening. Visibility is dropping toward 300 meters, roughly 1,000 feet. The controller in the tower cannot see either aircraft. Neither aircraft can see the other. They are navigating entirely by radio calls, by taxi chart, and by counting the taxiway exits as they pass. Pan Am does not exit at Charlie 3. They roll past it. The investigation would later debate whether the taxiway marking was obscured in the fog, whether Charlie 3 was partially blocked by other aircraft sitting on the parallel taxiway, or whether the crew simply miscounted the exits. Whatever the reason, Pan Am is still on the active runway when KLM reaches the far end and turns around at the threshold. KLM has back-taxied the full length of runway 09. They are lined up on the threshold, engines running at idle, ready to depart. The first officer, Klaus Mears, calls ATC for their departure routing clearance. This is important. A routing clearance tells the crew where to go after takeoff, what fixes to fly to, what altitude to climb to. It is not the takeoff clearance. It does not authorize the aircraft to roll. Those are two completely separate authorizations, and any airline pilot knows the difference. ATC reads back the routing. The first officer reads it back correctly. And then Captain Van Zanten advances the throttle's mirror, says immediately, "Wait, we don't have ATC clearance." Van Zanten eases back slightly. He says, "No, I know that. Go ahead, ask." The first officer transmits to ATC, "We are now at takeoff." What he means is, we are ready for takeoff clearance, but the phrase "we are now at takeoff" is deeply ambiguous. It could mean ready. It could mean rolling. It is not standard phraseology, and the controller at Los Rodeos interprets it as a position report, not a request for clearance. ATC responds, "Okay, stand by for takeoff. I will call you." At essentially the same moment Pan Am transmits, Captain Grubbs reports that his aircraft is still on the runway and has not yet cleared. Both transmissions arrive at approximately the same time. They step on each other. Both are heard in the KLM cockpit as a single tone, a long squeal, and then silence. The first officer asks, "Is he not clear that Pan Am?" The KLM flight engineer, who has also been listening carefully, raises the same question more directly. "Is he not off the Pan Am?" Van Zanten says, "Oh yes, certainly." He pushes the throttles full forward. KLM 4805 is rolling. 248 people on board, fully loaded with fuel for Amsterdam, accelerating down runway 09. Pan Am 1736 is still on that runway, somewhere ahead in the fog, searching for a taxiway exit in 300 meters of visibility near rotation speed. The KLM first officer sees lights through the fog. He recognizes what he is looking at in the same instant. There is nothing left to do. Van Zanten hauls back on the controls. He gets the nose up, he gets the main gear off the ground. He is partially airborne, but he does not have the speed or the altitude to clear the 747 sitting in his path. KLM 4805 strikes Pan Am 1736. The lower fuselage and engines of the KLM aircraft tear through the upper fuselage of the Pan Am. Both aircraft are destroyed. The KLM catches fire immediately and burns on the runway. Everyone aboard KLM dies. 335 people aboard Pan Am are killed. 61 survive. 583 dead. On a clear day, both aircraft would never have been at Los Rodeos at all. With less fog, Van Zanten sees the Pan Am before he rolls. With standard phraseology, the ambiguity disappears. With one more assertive voice in the KLM cockpit, the aircraft stops before it accelerates. Any one of those changes, and 583 people go home. Now, here is the part of the Tenerife story that most accounts underemphasize. Captain Van Zanten was not reckless. He was not incompetent. He was not cavalier about safety. He was, by every objective measure, one of the finest professional pilots in Europe. He had forgotten more about flying technique than most of us will ever learn. What he was, in those final minutes before the throttles went forward, was pressured. Hours on the ground. Duty time ticking. Passengers restless. And when a senior pilot becomes acutely focused on departure, something happens in the threat awareness part of the brain. The background processor that should be running continuous checks goes quiet. The urgency narrows the field of attention. The first officer voiced concern. The flight engineer voiced concern. Neither one pressed hard. They asked the question, Van Zanten answered it. And neither one said clearly, "We stop, we hold, we do not move until we have an explicit clearance and confirmation." The runway is clear. That dynamic, the gap between voicing a concern and actually stopping the aircraft, that is what Tenerife permanently changed. The accident drove the formal development of what we now call crew resource management, or CRM, the concept that a cockpit is not a hierarchy where the captain's judgment is final and unchallengeable. It is a team with a shared responsibility to the outcome. A first officer who stops an aircraft and says we do not have clearance is not being insubordinate. He is doing exactly what his training demands. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, formalized CRM training requirements through the 1980s. It is now a mandatory element of every airline training program, and its principles have filtered down into every advanced general aviation training environment. The core of it is this: speak up early and clearly. Because a moment of awkwardness costs nothing, and the alternative can cost everything. Tenerife also rewrote how we talk on the radio. Before 1977, pilot phraseology was loose by today's standards. Conversational crews would use non-standard language because everyone understood what was meant, most of the time. After Tenerife, the International Civil Aviation Organization, or ICAO, and the FAA moved systematically to eliminate ambiguity from aeronautical communication. The phrase cleared for takeoff became the exclusive property of air traffic control. A pilot does not say those words, ATC says them. The separation is deliberate and absolute. You are not cleared unless the controller transmits exactly that phrase. The phrase position and hold, which itself contained a trap because hold means stop in other contexts, was eventually replaced in the United States in 2010 with line up and wait, unambiguous. Nothing else means line up and wait. Readbacks became mandatory and formal. When ATC gives you a runway clearance or holds you short of a runway, you read it back, verbatim. Not paraphrased, not summarized. The runway number, the instruction, word for word. If your readback is wrong, ATC corrects it before you move. These are not bureaucratic formalities. They are not procedural overhead, invented by regulators who never flew an aircraft. They are scar tissue from a foggy afternoon in the Canary Islands. For the pilots listening, here is the direct application to your flying. Runway incursions remain one of the leading causes of fatal ground accidents in aviation. The geometry is different than Tenerife. You're not in a 747 at a congested international divert field. You're at your home airport or at an unfamiliar field during a cross country or at a towered airport in reduced visibility. But the mechanism is identical. A pilot with something on their mind. A controller managing multiple aircraft. An ambiguous transmission. An assumption. And suddenly two aircraft occupying the same piece of pavement. When ATC tells you to hold short of a runway, you hold short. You do not taxi into position anticipating the clearance. When you receive takeoff clearance, you read it back with the runway number, every single time, without exception. When you heard a squeal on the frequency and you're not certain what was said, you stop and ask, you get a positive confirmation before you roll. Van Zanten assumed the Pan Am was clear. He was one of the best pilots alive. It still ended in 583 dead. The other thing Tenerife teaches about is what human factors researchers call authority gradient. The steeper the gradient, the harder it becomes for the junior person to push back. In commercial aviation, that gradient runs between captain and first officer, and Tenerife proved it could be lethal. In general aviation, the gradient often runs between a pilot and their passengers, or between an instructor and a student who sees something and thinks, well, they're the CFI, they must know. Tenerife says, say the thing, ask the question, be awkward for a second, because the other side of an unchallenged assumption can look like runway 09 on March 27th. The Spanish Aviation Authority published the accident investigation. It is one of the most thorough documents in the history of aviation accident analysis. It names every contributing factor. The bomb at Gran Canaria, the diversion, the taxiway configuration, the fog, the non-standard phraseology, the simultaneous transmissions, the authority gradient, the time pressure. It is a textbook in human factors. KLM, to their credit, did not shelve it. They took what happened to their most celebrated pilot and built systematic CRM training from the wreckage. Some of the earliest formalized crew resource management programs in commercial aviation came directly from KLM's response to Tenerife. They turned a catastrophe into curriculum that has since saved lives we will never be able to count. That is what aviation does when it is at its best. It does not bury the accident report. It does not protect the reputation of the captain. It reads every page. It changes the language. It rebuilds the culture. It makes the next crew safer because of what the last crew lost. Every readback you give, every time you wait for the specific phrase cleared for takeoff before you roll, every time you ask ATC to say again because the frequency squealed and you are not certain. That discipline is built in part on 583 people who did not make it off Los Rodeos on a foggy afternoon in 1977. Hold the line on the language. It was written in a price nobody should have had to pay. Sources for today include the Spanish Ministerio de Transportes Accident Investigation Report, ICAO Circular 236 on Human Factors in Aviation Accidents, and the body of CRM research from Helmreich, Fushi, and Hackman. You can find more at radiohangar.com. I am Tower. Safe flying.